Hi, this is Scott Johnson. You know me as one of the four of us. And I would very much like to encourage you that those of you who like this show and like what I do here on the Frog Pants Network and what we do here with FilmSack, to head on over to patreon.com/frogpants, throw us a little bit of money our way. Nothing crazy. If all of you just did a buck, oh man, you know how far that would go? It'd be amazing. So take some time, head over there, patreon.com/frogpants, and help us out. Okay, yeah, all right. Here's the show.
First, there was the collapse of civilization. Anarchy. Genocide. Starvation. Then when it seemed things couldn't get any worse, we got the plague. The living death, quickly closing its fist over the entire planet. And then we heard the rumors that the last scientists were working on a cure that would end the plague and restore the world. Restore it? Why? I like the death.
I'll take you to Atlanta and you'll give me the cure. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 238. My name is Scott Johnson. For some reason, the music went off. Now it's back. Okay, great. Joining me tonight, Brian Run and Yell Dunaway.
Ah, Run and Yell. Hey. I liked it better the first time I saw it when it was called Turner and Hooch. No, wait, sorry, I watched K-9 and Jim Belushi this weekend. What I meant to say was liked it better the first time I saw it when it was called Kindergarten Cop. No, wait, that was Cop and a Half with Burt Reynolds. Man, there's some crappy movies on Netflix. Oh, yeah, here we are. I liked it better the first time I saw it was when it was called Every Damn Van Damme Movie Ever.
Mm. We've seen,
hey,
we've seen
gonna
them all.
Are we going to flex or are we going to fight?
We've seen them all now, I think. Pretty sure we're getting there. We're getting
close.
There.
Yeah.
Only a couple left. Why? Nicely done. Right. Also with us, Randy Weirdos in the Window, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Nice to be talking to you guys. You would not believe what has happened to me over the last week since we last talked. Okay, so first of all, I walked to Atlanta. Atlanta! Ah, it's the city of dreams, that amazing final destination for all adventures, Atlanta! And I walked there in about 2 days, so it turns out I started only 20 or 30 miles outside of Atlanta. So I guess I started in maybe Noonan or, you know, like Buford, Georgia, somewhere like that. Anyway, here's the interesting thing. The entire road to Atlanta is inside a sewer. And in the sewer, it rains. I'm not kidding. It rains inside the sewer. And then you get there, and they crucify you. So that sucks. But my friends, it's like walking into a painting.
I'm glad you saw what I saw.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, that's a thing. We'll talk more about those things, because there are plenty of those things in this movie. Also with us, Brian, Nightmares on the Cross, Ibbot.
Oh, they weren't there.
Yeah.
So next month, I'm going to be premiering my one-man play on Broadway entitled Jean-Claude Van Damme's Cyborg. I'm going to give you guys a little sneak preview on how the ending is going to go. It's going to go like this. Also, the fight scenes are going to be really easy because you never have to show more than one person fighting at a time.
Perfect.
Right, remember how watching Total Recall, we were talking about it could have been called War Garble?
Mm-hmm,
this right. movie should have been called War Garble.
Yeah.
It really should have.
It's nonstop. And we're not kidding. Like, it's not just it's not hyperbole to say that there isn't somebody yelling at least 60% of the film.
Right. Yeah. And it's always the gang. I call them the, the Yell Gang. They're Tourette's gang.
The Reavers.
Right.
The Road Warriors.
Right.
The
guys following Jason Momoa lookalike around.
Was Brian Bosworth in this movie, like, initially? Was he there?
No, that wasn't him. You're thinking he's the guy that looks like the sax player from
Lost Boys.
Yeah. When I first saw it, like, there was like a scene outside and this one dude had like really blonde hair and it looked just like Brian Bosworth for a second.
He also looked like a pro wrestler from 15 years ago and I couldn't put my finger on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were definitely channeling the Macho Man with the ethnically light-eyed Hawaiian guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, they had him. I mean,
they really played that, man. It's like, hey, look, he's a dark-skinned man, but he has bright eyes. Well, we're going to glare into the screen for about five minutes.
But wasn't that whole thing... Okay, I got a question about that. I'm glad you brought it up. Wasn't that... And we'll hear Fletcher in a minute. But wasn't the eyes supposed to indicate that he was cyborg and that those were fake robot eyes?
No.
Because his eyes were so blue. I was wondering about that, if that was the case. Like,
yeah.
I think it's just to scare the white people, to be honest. That's what I think.
Probably.
Yeah. It should, if that's the case, they should have made some nod toward it, other than showing you his eyes over and over,
like a little or something, or if like you kill him at the end.
There was no other evidence that he was a cyborg, and quite frankly, there was no evidence in this movie of cyborgs. Like, there's this one person you barely ever see.
Took her hair off,
And it doesn't make sense why it's called Cyborg. It should have been called Crucifixion or something. I don't know what it should have been called.
It should run like hell and yell is what it should have been called.
Right. Rubber it wasn't in? Called Cyborg originally, right? Wasn't it called something else?
Oh, no.
It?
So here's where the fun begins. All right. I'm going to do Fletcher first, and then we're going to get to the trivia of this thing, which is going to blow anyone who's listening's mind about this movie and its origins. So here's Fletcher. He explains more about Cyborg.
Cyborg. Jean-Claude Van Damme plays mercenary Gibson Rickenbacker in this post-apocalyptic adventure that follows the Soldier of Fortune in his quest for revenge against Fender Tremolo. Really? Played by Vincent Klein. The man who killed his true love. When the cannibalistic flesh pirates, who plan to hoard the cure for a virulent plague, capture a beautiful human robot, only Rickenbacker can save her. And save what remains of civilization.
Okay, fair enough. And he's right to be a little concerned about these stupid names, because they're character real names. Dumb. Super,
but
super dumb.
It was
dumb.
Such fun. Like, this is one of the best parts of the movie, was like every time somebody came on the screen, I would point and go, I wonder if he's named Vic Firth, you know?
Like right, Firth. Exactly. Dave Gretsch.
Okay, so here's the big trivia of this movie. This was supposed to be and was originally planned as a sequel to Masters of the Universe, the He-Man movie
with
Dolph Lundgren. So it was supposed
which
to
makes
be that.
A full circle all the way around Universal Soldier later on.
Yeah, of course. That would have been amazing. But since it wasn't, so what it was supposed to be, there's a couple things that happened. That movie got canceled. So did a Spider-Man live-action movie.
Thank God.
I remember this is back way before Raimi and Good Spider-Man. Okay? Yeah. So they took all these costumes and set decorations and stuff from those two movies and integrated them here.
Wait, I did not see Spider-Man one time.
What are you talking about? I didn't either.
But I think one of the costumes was a leftover Kraven the Hunter costume.
It was.
No, but that's right. There were multiple bandits who were wearing, for some strange reason, stockings over their face.
Yep.
But it was it had been starched so that it fitted.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
And they had like mouth cut out, but otherwise they were blinded by their own masks.
Yeah.
And what, by the way, was there any purpose to that? Like the bad guy, the real bad guy, the whole movie he's wearing really, really dirty glasses he can't possibly see out of. Yeah. And
like
then there's one flashback. There's one flashback to when he had clean glasses. And you're like, what? Why is he... Is there a reason?
It's like you were talking.
The plague wiped out all lens cleaner.
right. Earlier, before the show started, we were having a conversation about why Vegas has gone so gross in parts of it. That's what this felt like. It was nice and shiny in the beginning. He wasn't nearly the dirtbag he would become. He kills that family, puts him in the well, and now dirtiest sunglasses in the history of the world.
Stupidest way to die, too, by the way.
What,
it's like,
oh, well?
No, you know, and Van Damme is the only one that comes out of the well because apparently he used the baby in his girlfriend's body to cushion his blow.
Yeah. Right. I wondered about that, you know, because he crawled out of there pretty unscathed. A little.
Yeah, it's like, that was easy. Yeah.
A little mentally shook up. Okay, here's my next question about who's a cyborg and who isn't. So if those glasses or if those contacts or whatever that guy was wearing were not indicators that he was a synthetic human being or partially.
Right.
Then are we to think that Van Damme, after a pretty brutal crucifixion, we're not talking just about tying him up there, but like two daggers or arrows or whatever they were, through his wrists, he comes down from all that eventually and just kind of rubs it off. It's like, eh.
In the best way possible. This actually goes back to Randy's intro when he said it seemed like it was only 2 days. And I was trying to think, you know, I thought it was longer than that because from the time that Van Damme is taken off the crucifix until the next scene when they show him, his little stigmatas have healed.
Yeah.
Basically.
So is he a cyborg is what I'm getting at.
But is that timeline or is that a mistake?
I think it's a mistake. Right. I think it's a mistake.
I think it's lack of budget.
Well, mm-hmm. maybe. I mean, this guy was it says here in some of the stuff that Albert Puyan, whatever it is.
I like Puyan. Good.
He is, and by the way, the head writer on this movie, don't be fooled. That Kitty Chalmers is his pseudonym for his cat.
Yes, oh my gosh.
He wrote it. He just blamed it on his
Kitty
cat.
Kitty Chalmers is the best name ever.
Kitty Chalmers.
The movie doesn't really feel written.
Skinner!
I actually think some of the better parts of the movie came together sort of without script. Like, there's all sorts of things that
you
I was
can't
like.
Script Van Damme. Be for real.
Well, yes, but I understand what you're saying. Okay. This is so hard. This is one of those movies I'm actually kind of having a hard place to start because it is poo. Okay. It is poo. Quantifiable poo. But it's, I had so much fun watching it. Like I was riveted the entire time. Big, stupid, dumb fights. Like ridiculous roundhouse kicks that were three different angles on the same kick before it would land. Like things like that.
But it wasn't the same kick. That's the funny thing.
Right.
They filmed three different kicks and tried to make them all look like the same.
Yeah.
The movie's like 80 minutes long, but if not for slow-mo, this movie would have been 20 minutes long.
Well, the reason that kick is three different kicks is because they got one camera. And so they're like, all right, we need to take three of these.
Yeah, let's turn it and do that.
And you know, some compare this guy to like Ed Wood in that he is insanely serious about the movies he makes, but doesn't know how bad he is. And I was feeling that, like
you gotta admit though. I mean, whether you wanted to be pumped or not, there was a couple of times you had real emotional feelings.
Nope.
Right.
Nope.
Never.
Nope.
Not even when you were watching this. You did not have real.
Okay,
emotional
Randy, what was your emotional feelings? Explain.
Okay, so not when they were trying to give me feels. Like when the flashbacks, when you see his wife and you see his kid, and you realize that they were just like senselessly murdered, and he's. Out for revenge. That's a trope, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Big one.
Let's call it the Gladiator Maximus trope.
That's a pretty good. It's a good name for it. I like it.
I thought it was the Mad Max trope.
Yes.
Oh well, it goes way back before Gladiator. Just Gladiator came to mind. Like
right.
This whole thing, but that wasn't where I got the feels. Where I got the feels is when he gets together with this girl and they're traveling together. And they inexplicably are on the beach, which is nowhere near Atlanta. I don't get that.
I'm not interested in this kind of feel. Yeah. So when she got naked and ran into the water, is that what you're talking about?
No, after that, they're camping.
Yeah.
Right. And she's like, I'm here with this man, and he's this like perfect man. Like it's mind blowing. Another trope, by the way. Every morning he wakes up and he's got perfectly shaved chin.
Oh yeah. He looked great in the morning. No question about it. There. Yeah. Big time.
But anyway, she's like, here he is. I feel something. And she sort of makes a pass at him.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out, actually, he's either asexual or gay. Or
a cyborg.
Right? Or a cyborg, right? Right? But in that moment, like, I was like, oh, this is how this whole movie is supposed to be. This whole movie is supposed to be actual people acting, right? And telling me something without me having to hear grunting and so forth. That was like a really effective little scene.
I'm with you. And they immediately did another flashback. This first half of the movie was nothing but flashbacks. It's like Memento big time. It's like, what's going on? I don't know what's going on. We're flashing back too many times. Who are these people? I don't know. But I had a lot of fun with that part. Actually, I thought the fight scenes, even though they were over the top, ridiculous. I mean, when Van Damme, like, lowers his head and he stares out through those eyebrows and starts coming towards you in slow-mo, I got to watch. I got to admit, I was riveted to the screen.
When they were up on the raffle, or what do you call that stuff?
Raptor scaffolding.
Scaffolding. There you go. I was going to say the raffling. You know, the raffling.
Yeah, yeah, you do.
When the sequel to the raffle.
Yeah,
the raffling.
When they're up there and they're charging across at each other, and the one guy's got two knives, and Van Damme has
you've got two knives, and he's only got one knife.
That was intense. I mean, you were kind of rooting for him a little bit, and the yelling would start, and then it got dumb. But yeah, there's moments of kind of like a flash of like, yeah, this is cool in 89, and that looked great, and that's a thing you want to see him do. And then they would have dialogue, and you'd want to inject yourself with horrible things, you know, dishwasher liquid or something.
Yeah, I wanted to look up, and I didn't get a chance to. I wanted to look up who the fight coordinator was for this thing and see.
I would assume Van Damme had a huge, because
you think
didn't he do like some fight coordinating when he first started his movie career? Wasn't that kind of what he was?
He was like a choreographer.
I think he probably does insist on doing the fight coordination for movies that he's on. I think we've even talked about that. Like, you know, he's always listed as a fight coordinator or something along those lines because he.
Right.
Oh, the CFC. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, you know, the CFC.
The co-fight coordinator.
But I'm curious if there's anything else that we've seen or if this person ever worked again after doing the fight coordination for this film.
That's a damn fine question.
Because he actually permanently blinded a dude.
That's right. Yeah. And there was a lawsuit and a settlement, and I can't remember who lost or won that. Did Van Damme lose?
Van Damme lost cost him $485,000.
Oh, my gosh.
You pulled my eye out. That's wicked bad.
I have a hard time laughing at it because it's like
it's serious.
I can't like this is a movie, dude. You do like there's no reason to be actually injuring somebody.
This is true, you know? But things happen. You know, like that helicopter in Twilight Zone or whatever. Things happen occasionally. There's accidents all the time in filmmaking, and that's why you know there's all these guidelines and whatever. But it got me thinking today. There's a story out today about a pro wrestler who got killed in a move and there's video of it floating around where he is kicked in a certain way or whatever and it ends his life right there in the ring, and the wrestling people are all like, oh man, that's terrible, what a tragic thing this is, anyway, see you next week kind of thing, and they're not it's not that they're not mourning this person's passing, but they sure don't get real litigious the way it seems like every time something bad happens in a movie everybody sues everybody, and I don't know the difference is.
I think in wrestling, I mean, you probably got to sign so much paperwork. It's probably ridiculous.
Well, it's probably a lot of waivers and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
If Owen Hart falls to his death in pretty much any other kind of entertainment, somebody's going under. Like somebody's going to get sued to closure.
Yeah.
Whereas the WWE and the facilities where he was, they took a hit, mm-hmm. but it didn't like end of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just interesting. I mean, those businesses are run differently and have, you know, different unions in place and all that. But, you know, if you're going to get your eye removed, well, okay, like the Brandon Lee stuff, or yeah, was that his name? Mm-hmm. Brandon Lee. When he was shot with the prop gun, was there a bunch of freak out and recourse on the family side? I don't remember if there was.
You'll remember, though, that the story was very immediately pinned on him, right? Yeah, like he was being a moron, it was his mistake. Mm-hmm. Like they got out ahead of that story really early.
Yeah. Maybe that was to save money. I don't know. Well, anyway. Right.
Well, so the guy that's listed as the stunt coordinator, there isn't really a fight. Well, Van Damme is listed as fight trainer.
Oh, okay.
All right.
In the cast. So, uncredited fight trainer.
What I'm going to do is poke you in the eye. It's not going to hurt.
But the guy who is listed as the stunt coordinator, sorry, one sec, is a guy named Tom Elliott, who has seriously hundreds of things that he's credited with, going all the way back to 1965 and Days of Our Lives, doing the stunts for Days of Our Lives. But MASH is on here, Vegas, Hooper, Knott's Landing,
about Hooper.
Magnum P.I., Cagney and Lacey, all the way up to recent stuff, currently working on Batman versus Superman, also worked on Captain America Winter Soldier, and Iron Man 3, and
he's a lifer.
Fast and Furious. He is a lifer. Right. Yeah.
Well, okay. So I guess maybe is it possible that in this particular case, Van Damme was in charge of the fight that happened, and that's why he was mm-hmm. directly responsible.
I would totally believe that. Yeah.
And you could see him maybe going outside the purview of that other dude who maybe is more professional, saying, "All right, we got to do this and that and this." And Van Damme's like, "You know, I was in Kickboxer and Bloodsport." Whip, whap, boom. Guy loses his eye. You know?
Right. It's, yeah, absolutely. I could completely see that.
Especially if they, you know, the whole thing fell in the favor of that guy. There was probably something like that. Who knows? We're making this up as we go, but that all feels right to me.
Now, is it the stunt coordinator's responsibility? Who actually is the person who's in charge of saying, this fight is ridiculous, this would never happen, or if you know, if anybody put any sort of thought into this, they'd realize this fight would be over in like...
That's when you go to an expert. That's when you put the expert in there.
My guess is the director made those decisions, and this guy rolled his eyes a lot.
Ultimately, you have a director, and he can't wait until he's sitting with an editor to make decisions like, this fight scene doesn't work, you know?
Yeah.
He's got to see what's going on in front of him and imagine how it's going to ultimately look. And this guy was just a rank amateur.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all there is to it.
Well, the best part about what these movies were and what they became is that both the Spider-Man film and the sequel to He-Man and Masters of the Universe were supposed to be filmed simultaneously by this guy. So they hired this guy with a sketchy film past. I mean, I just want to put in everybody's head. This is how comic book stuff used to get treated before we got smart about it. Right. This is not the Marvel of today. This is the Marvel of yesterday where they were like, you know what? Do you want to make our cool comic book into a pile of rotten diarrhea? Have at it.
Yeah, I mean, there was probably a lot of disregarding comics as well. You know, comic fans won't care because they'll see their favorite superheroes on the screen and they'll be happy about that. And they won't care if the special effects aren't up to snuff or if there's not a great story. They'll just be happy because they're comic book fans, right? So they'll just be happy to see Spider-Man up on the... On the big screen.
That's what Smilin' Stan Lee told everybody, and they just went for it.
By the way, as I was looking for the stunt coordinator, I did find that one of the special effects assistants is named, and I'm not making this up, Jeep Stapleton.
Jeep
Stapleton.
Which
I think is probably the guy's name for his dog.
That's amazing.
Right.
I just want to point out that in the Van Damme list, this is one of his first films.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, The only film he's made before this where he's in the starring role is Bloodsport.
Yeah.
Which is probably his best movie, which is bizarre to think about. But, you know, so he made Bloodsport and he's not the star, you know, action hero in other films he's been in. He makes this movie and Kickboxer in the same year.
But Randy, we cannot skip something I just found out as you were explaining that, looking back at his movies previous to Cyborg. Uh-huh. We had something called Barbara Street where he was just an extra. Yeah, yeah. Then he was in Breakin' as an extra in the crowd.
Right, he was an extra.
He was Soldier and Missing in Action. And then my favorite role of all time in 1984, his role in Monaco Forever as Gay Karate Man.
I love that back in 84, he was still toying with the name Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Van Damme, right?
Van Damme. Van Damme, really?
Van Damme.
Yeah. It's V-A-N, damn. That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. That changed with Bloodsport. But his next movie, No Retreat, No Surrender, was he played Ivan Krasinski, the Russian.
The Russian.
Yeah, the Russian. But Gay Karate Man. I mean, come on.
That's the best.
That is maybe the greatest things ever. Anyway, where else to go? There's so many things. All right, let's just jump in here. So a lot of the clothes, like the bad guy was wearing that armor, what do you call
chain
it?
Mail.
The chainmail
kind of thing going on.
That was a costume from, where is it? Here we go. It was worn by, the stuff worn by Fender was part of the costume for the character Blade in the Masters of the Universe. So that Blade character we saw for that spectacular episode.
Whose shoulder pads were those from? Was it Dolly Parton from 9 to 5? What was?
May as well have been, right?
Right.
Sequined.
Also, by the way, Fender tremolo wearing the who again has the great tremolo. I know has the great trope of taking off the one piece of armor that probably would have saved his life had he kept it on for the final battle.
Yep, that's a good one.
Hey man, you gotta flex. You gotta.
He was War Child in Point Break.
Oh, what?
Keanu Reeves and Gary Busey, yeah.
Like he does have the physique of a Hawaiian surfer man, doesn't he?
One of the guys that they break in on, I think, in the War Child was one of Patrick Swayze's buddies that wasn't putting on the rubber mask. Yeah. Like he drove him out to the desert and stuff, I think.
My memory of all things Point Break is so bad. I really need to see it again because I don't watch it enough. And I know there's some people that see that movie on a regular, but I haven't seen it in so long that FilmSack is still bereft of it.
Why do I feel like we just watched it for FilmSack?
Oh, we haven't.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
It does feel like it.
Right.
Yeah.
The blonde-eyed Hawaiian was also in Double Dragon.
Oh, we saw that.
Yeah,
that was shit. Yeah, that was garbage. But see, okay, let's get to that point now. Randy was saying how he love-hated this movie so hard earlier before the show. It is one of those movies, right? Like I am enjoying the hell out of myself, but knowing the entire time it's bad. It's my favorite kind of FilmSack movie, and it's so I feel like it's such a rare beast. To have where you get something that I've never seen it before, never saw it when I was a kid, have no idea that it was out there or existed. Saw it now. For some reason, I thought this was the one where he played his twin, but I got that mixed up with like
Double Dragon.
Trouble or something. Double Dragon? Was
double
that what it was?
Double Dragon. No, Double Impact.
Double Impact, yeah.
Double Team.
Double Impact.
Double Mint. Double Impact.
Double Mint. That's it. Double Mint. was my point. Oh, that, you know, we get it in here. I'm expecting nothing really. I don't know what I'm expecting from this thing. And what I got was so bad that it was kind of great and I really enjoyed myself. So thank you, FilmSack, for bringing this film to me.
The one-liners that they gave to Fender Tremolo, mm-hmm. how over the top mm-hmm. bad he was just fantastic.
Wasn't even his voice most of the time, was it? Was it ever his voice for real?
I couldn't tell if he was dubbed or if he was doing that on stage.
I think he was dubbed by, but I think that was the actor's voice.
Okay.
Because they made a point to talk about Ralph Noller, who played Double Knife Man.
Oh,
with the long
right.
hair. Double mm-hmm. Kick, Double Knife Man.
Mm-hmm.
That they had to redub all of his stuff because his German was so thick.
He's okay, so for those who don't know who Ralph Noller is, he is a star. He's one of the guys from Gladiator. He's the big friend Gladiator that kind of works alongside Maximus. Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah.
But if you need it, listen, you need a big, giant, muscular man. He will mm-hmm. often fill the bill. He was in Scorpion King and Universal.
He was the guy at the end of Beer Fest
right.
during the drinking out of the boot battle.
Right. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Great big German.
Yep. Ralph Moeller, he was the big guy who when he was following Van Damme and down into the rainy sewer, and he seemed like he was going to just like massively just blow it out,
yeah.
but he ended up getting stabbed in the top of the head or something with
right.
Van Damme with his splits.
From the required Van Damme split straddle wall hang or whatever you want to call that.
Granted, that
it's in
was
my contract.
A,
I have to
right,
do that once
right,
per movie.
Right now, granted, that was an awesome freaking reveal because you're up close on Van Damme. You just see he's struggling. All of a sudden, you back up, and you know he's up above him, in like you know jammed into the sewer. Mm-hmm. But I hated it because he got killed just like that, and he was just gone. He was face down.
Yeah, I could have used more him as a henchman, not
a
dying
boss.
Too soon. Sure,
yeah.
as a mini boss, yeah. right. Right, as trash. We needed him as trash more often.
He was absolutely. I mean, this was such a movie of mini bosses.
Like, right.
You had to fight all the mini bosses while the boss just stood by and watched. And then at the end, you fight the boss.
Yeah. And it's no. It's a very strange dungeon where you fight the boss three times over the course
right.
of it.
Yeah.
And
right.
you lose. You basically lose to the boss twice before you ultimately get to the final boss fight.
They have a chance of dropping BOEs, but they don't. Yeah. It's usually just nothing in this movie. You didn't get anything good off any of those guys. So.
I love this Ralph Moeller's biography because he's 6'6", he's 300 pounds, huge man. And at the end, it says he's a proponent of a healthy lifestyle and he likes horseback riding. And I just can't help thinking the horse probably doesn't.
Nope.
Right.
No.
Not you again.
We're on our fourth horse now. Shut up, put the horse under my sizable man body.
We've seen it before, too, in Universal Soldier.
That's right. Did we see that one for this? We did, didn't we?
We did, yeah, we watched that for this.
Okay.
Have you guys seen?
Because I would not have watched that on my own, and I know I've seen that movie.
Yeah. You should have. Now, he was really more like a cyborg in that movie. Did you guys see the 2012 Universal Soldier? I think it's The Reckoning.
No.
Wow, that is actually really ultra violent and intense.
Should we see it on Netflix
right now?
Should we see it? Because I've had the same question. Is that a thing that you should see
for FilmSack? No, but should you watch it yourself? Yes.
Why not FilmSack? Why not?
Because
on the face of it,
there's not a lot to grab onto. Because really, honestly, the first 30 minutes is actually pretty well made. I mean,
Really? You're blowing my mind here. You're recommending the newest direct-to-DVD streaming piece of garbage that is the latest Universal Soul.
Yeah. Granted, I've only seen the first 30 minutes. It is ultra-violent. Ultra-violent. Now, so I had to stop. Because not because the movie was not enjoyable, but just I had to stop. So let's just say the first 30 minutes is freaking intense.
So this is the first viewing of Cyborg for all of us, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I actually saw this back in the day on like Saturday afternoon matinee kind of showings.
Yeah. I don't know why, but it always gets my attention when a movie sounds like something that we should have all seen multiple times and we haven't.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, it like, surprises me. This one especially. Like of all the movies we've seen lately that none of us had seen, I felt like there were reasons why we wouldn't have or, you know, whatever. But this one feels like one we should have all seen and somehow most of us didn't. It's weird.
Right, right. Well, I remember this one, Cherry 2000, back there in the early 90s on Fox, they would show a lot of these things on like in the Saturday afternoon. This is before really had a sci-fi channel that I was able to watch.
Sure.
So,
the early days of Fox, they would run a lot of weird stuff on the weekends.
Right.
Because that's what you did. They were kind of like AMC, except they weren't classics. It's like American movie garbage. AMG, you know the one. The budget, including Van Damme's salary, was only $500K. So a real shot in the arm to lose all that money, Van Damme, for poking his eye out. Anyway, $2 million had already been spent on production design, costumes, music prep. Music prep, that's what it says here. On the aborted projects, Masters of the Universe 2 and Spider-Man, which were cancellations. What's funny is they were going to call that movie Masters of the Universe 2, colon, Cyborg. Which,
really?
Yeah, because the story went like this. I've been digging around, major rabbit hole on this one. Skeletor destroys Earth.
You got to say it right, Scott. You got to say Skeletor right.
Skeletor destroys Earth. So he goes, he destroys Earth, and He-Man goes to see what's up. He comes down, and it's just a wreck. Everything's destroyed. Everyone's looking like everybody in the Cyborg movie. That's the costumes. And he has to try to get, you know, whatever struggling earthlings are left and figure out how to take their planet back. And the big nemesis down there that's working for Skeletor is somebody called Cyborg. That was the original storyline of that damn film. I don't hate that idea that much. I mean, you know, that movie sucked, and we did it for FilmSack on a Nerdtacular a couple years ago, and it was great for that event. But I think I would have been okay with a Masters of the Universe 2.
I thought there was a Masters of the Universe 2, so I was totally fooled.
Not that I'm aware of, unless there's been something made they don't talk about anywhere on the internet.
Right. Maybe I'm just getting it confused. What was there a keyboard thing in Masters of the Universe 1? Am I like totally just forgetting the whole segment?
Like a Casio keyboard? Like
yeah, wasn't there,
this?
Like, a, oh, wasn't the there like a magical keyboard?
No, it was, yes. Remember the band, the music store that the kid worked at?
Right.
And he had a magical thing.
Transport back
and forth. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I was thinking that was part two. I was trying to separate out that part from the rest of the movie, I suppose.
Well, okay, so that was the movie that had the principal from Marty McFly's principal was the cop, right? I think.
Principal.
You know, look, if they would have just taken that cast and said, because weren't there some semi-famous people in there? Like, I can't remember now. Oh, it's been so long.
But Dolph Lundgren?
Besides Dolph Lundgren. I know what it was. The guy that plays Commander Paris in Star Trek Voyager was in it.
Right.
If they'd have just carried that forward, you carry that forward, you have Van Damme play a crazy half-robot that's trying to kill He-Man. I mean, come on. That's a classic in the making, man.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Did they like film some of the special effects beforehand, I wonder? Because that scene where they're assembling the cyborg.
Yeah.
That seemed like it was filmed it was from a totally different movie.
Yeah, for something else. Even when she was turning her head around, I felt like that was from a different movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All that stuff. Now, that could just be the effects team is just completely out of it, and they did something, you know, that felt just different. But all that effects stuff was weird. Maybe that was Kitty Chalmers doing in the story script.
Kitty Chalmers.
So funny. You imagine him coming home.
By the way, Kitty Chalmers is not just credited with this this movie.
Oh, yeah?
Kitty Chalmers has written 3 movies. Deceit, yeah. Cyborg, and Journey to the Center of the Earth. The Journey to the Center of the Earth almost feels like it's something we should do on FilmSack because it's you know, young people exploring a cave in Hawaii fall into a hole, wind up in the lost city of Atlantis. But it stars Emo Phillips and Kathy Ireland.
Oh my gosh.
I've heard that name for a reason.
Great. No, yes. Hold on. I'm signing us up.
Yeah, put us on there for that one. These are, by the way, all directed by Kitty Chalmers, often directing partner. what's his name? Albert Poon.
Albert Poon.
Yeah. Come on.
Co-directing on Journey to the Center of the Earth is Rusty Lemonade. Oh, Rusty Lemurande.
Like Rusty Lemonade.
They must have made money, right?
Like these... My dog, Rusty Lemonade.
They made money, Randy. This movie definitely made money. Not for Van Damme because it put the guy's eye out, but the rest of the people.
I mean, this showed up in movie theaters, right? Like, you could see this with a ticket.
Yeah, you could see this with a ticket, but it did much better in the rental market.
I feel like it... Like, in one way, I'm a little sad, and I've said this via email, but I think this would have been a perfect Nerdtacular-type film, whatever year we did it. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite kind of thing, because the clips in here were just insane. The visuals were just perfect for that kind of thing. I feel like, do you guys ever feel like this is a more existential kind of, blanket question, but do you ever feel like we are going to eventually run out of this kind of thing for film sack? Is the finite number of movies?
Yeah,
they're making them faster than we can review them, Scott.
That's the thing. I felt like that 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I really worried that we were going to run out of movies. And then along the way, I got to realizing, like, actually the difference between films for the listeners of FilmSack is whether or not they've ever seen it and want to see it. Mm-hmm. You know, like this is a movie that I doubt many people have seen. I hope that they went and watched it, you know, on Netflix streaming in order to understand this episode. But like, we're going to get to I feel like we're going to get more and more of that. That's the real problem, is these films are coming out really, really fast, and we're going to be sacking Expendables 7 and no one will have watched it.
Yeah, it's a good point, because you actually both made the point. They're coming out so fast and furious. We're now to the point where this stuff can be created so that in 10 years, let's say, and I don't know how long we do this show, but you know what I mean? Like, let's say in 10 years from now.
10 years.
We may in theory, be reviewing things that were not even sent to theaters. These could be, you know, YouTube specials that somebody made, or some crappy sci-fi thing.
Reviewing a YouTube movie.
Yeah, I mean, it could happen. The whole world's changing. It doesn't all have to be, you know, DVDs and screens from the 80s. I mean, that's obviously where we found most of our fun, but I think it's just an interesting future for not for film, because film's changing and evolving, you know, but will one day, will it be the four of us sitting around in big, heavy VR eyewear going, I remember when, you know? Like, I don't know.
Can you believe the aspect ratio on this stupid movie? 16:9. What were we thinking? Yeah. Everybody knows 9:16 is so much more enjoyable.
So the direction in this movie definitely took the road of deliberate shots. And I don't know what you even call this style, but it's that thing where his head turns and then the camera... You know, you see the full turn of his head, and there's no real flow to the next shot. It's just his head turns, and then they show a shot of a knife on the ground, and that is what his head turned to look at. And now they go back to him where he's still looking at it, and then he makes a move toward the knife, and then they cut to where the knife is, and the hand grabs it. Like, it's this very deliberate filmmaking.
Yeah, this is exactly what we used to call student film style, right? Because you try to do everything in camera, right? So... Mm-hmm. You would actually start and stop, and then go to another shot and start and stop.
Yeah,
because you have to make sure that every shot is there, so it's understandable.
I get. Yeah. Well, that's what they think, but we're just not that dumb. And even in '89, we weren't that dumb. Like, that's. I guess my question is, that's just this guy, right? It's got to be this director's thinking. Mm-hmm. I've got to get it all in. I can't miss a beat. I cannot go home and explain to Kitty Chalmers why we had to cut her scene.
I love this. Now she's a lady.
Kitty Chalmers won't be happy.
Yeah. No friskies for you. Write the scene again. but that kind of stuff just leads to the most fun I had in this particular movie. So I'm glad he did it. I'm glad it was that amateurish, because it was really fun to see Van Damme swing his head around. Or when he's thinking of the past, instead of having him like move or do anything, they have him just have his head go like this and just kind of turn to the right and look for a long time at nothing. Just stare at nothing, like he's in cyborg mode. He may be a cyborg. I think he might be a cyborg. I'm just throwing it out there. Okay, go ahead. What?
I think everybody might be. my favorite example of what you're talking about is a trope, a huge trope. It's called the empathy doll. And in this particular shot, Fender is... like slaughtering a bunch of people in order to steal their boat. And in the midst of all that, we get shots of this doll burning in flames.
And the cake topper.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Right.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Like the pirates have set this place on fire, and instead of seeing what's going on, the camera keeps focusing our attention on this burning cake topper.
Yeah.
There was happiness, and now there's not so
right,
much.
Yeah.
It's just happiness. It's a director who doesn't understand timing and pacing and rhythm, and I love it. I freaking love it.
did he not know, or did he just not care?
I don't think he knows.
He had two big projects lined up with big, you know, big plans. And then they go, nah, you're just going to do Cyborg and we're going to give you $500,000.
Well, okay, part of it is blamed on budgets like Mattel, who was doing the He-Man thing, and right. Marvel and everybody else involved in the other stuff. We're just like, well, we don't have the money, we don't want to do this. So that's a huge part of it. But I get a real sense, and it could just be me, but I'm what is coming off of this movie is a real sense of sincerity and earnestness from the direction of the movie. It's not good. It fails miserably in a lot of ways. But never once am I going, they were not taking this seriously. I think that guy took it dead seriously. And I think that is where you could say there's kind of an Ed Woodness to this guy. Because he genuinely thinks he's making an important movie here. And he thinks that despite all the limitations and, you know, like Ed Wood would say, we don't have any money. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. Like, he'll just make a big rubber monster and he'll flap it around with his arms or whatever. That kind of stuff comes out of this, like that dummy shot where the dummy fell through the thing. Great, dude, because it looked like a
which
damn
were you talking
dummy.
About the one in the one in the scaffolding?
Yes,
where it ground view, and it comes to. I thought that was fantastic.
It was awesome. It was clearly a dummy though, and not even just a dummy. Like, yeah, straight off of like a Sears show floor dummy, like a dummy right. dummy. Mm-hmm. And
I love the risk they took too, because obviously they just set the camera up down there and everybody cleared out.
Yeah.
And they just basically threw it at the camera.
Yeah, and it looked like the first shot, and that was good enough because he is an auteur and he knows what he's doing. Like, I'm getting that feeling the entire time, and I love that.
Very risky when you only have one camera to film with, though.
Right.
Maybe that was the last shot they made.
I mean, this is, so when people say, well, what's the difference between this kind of thing and Sharknado? Well, the difference is that Sharknado, they know what they're manufacturing. This guy thought he was making great movies, and what he was making was shit, and therefore great. Like, it's just, there's something about somebody who's just so obsessed with what they make. It's just like, I'm making the greatest thing, but everyone else around them is saying, no, you're not, but you don't have the heart to tell him, you know, like his sheer weird willpower is what is making crap to the screen. It's just amazing.
That is what amazes me about filmmaking. You can have a movie that is not that fantastic, but if you get everybody, if you're a director, you can get everybody to buy in, even if you're a crap director like this guy, and you get everybody in there being super enthusiastic, and everybody is enthusiastic in this movie. Nobody is just going, whatever, man, just here. They all seem enthusiastic. They're not good at it, but they're all very enthusiastic. And I felt the same thing when I was watching Star Wars about 2 weeks ago. I'm like, I was trying to critically view Star Wars and go, is this really a good movie, or was it just part of my childhood? And there's a lot of crap about it, but everybody's so crazily enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just earnest. That enthusiasm just goes right into screen.
It's earnest, and that's the difference between this and something that's made to seem earnest, but is obviously not like Sharknado. And I hope that we find more of these. We just got to keep digging.
Keep watching Netflix.
I mean, it's now in my top 10 favorite things we've watched for the show. It is not, I don't want people to confuse this, it is not a good movie at all, but it is one of my favorites I've watched for the show. Yes, Randy?
There's really 50 Shades of Grey when it comes to earnestness, like self-awareness for bad films.
Did you just describe the next new Ernest movie? If Ernest P. Worrell is still alive, he would make 50 Shades of Ernest. Oh, my gosh. Randy, you know I'd watch that over and over. Anyway, sorry. Continue with your service
point. Finally, yeah. We will find out what Vern really is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like that you said what Vern really is.
Yeah.
He's the cyborg. All right. Makes sense.
Right, get that.
Hey, there was a couple of... Go ahead, Randy. Would you...
No, it's hard to categorize bad movies in terms of self-awareness. They're just, they all have these different levels, and sometimes you're like, oh wow, that movie was trying really, really hard to be bad, and then you go read about it and find out, no, actually they weren't, and you know, it changes your perspective.
Yeah, it's never the same. I do have one of these. The dudes fighting while the girls are fighting. I always like that in a movie.
You can't have the guys fighting the girls, because otherwise then you get into an issue.
Yeah.
At least if the good guy's beating up a bad guy who happens to be a woman.
Yeah.
Right.
But in this case, what I like about it is it's simultaneous. So you got the two lead good and bad guys fighting it out in the mud and yelling, of course. And then you got the two ladies fighting it out somewhere else. I swear I've seen that in so many freaking movies.
You've seen it in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom when Short Round is hitting the little kid the same time.
When you calling Short Round a girl?
No, I'm just saying it's like you couldn't have Indiana Jones hitting a little kid,
right?
Like the bad kid, but you could have Indiana Jones hitting the guy the same way as Short Round was hitting
the
other kid.
That is a perfect example, and that's right. It's a little voodoo kid, right? The kid with the doll.
Yes,
the indie doll. Yeah. Oh,
now Natty was knocked out about 80% of this movie.
Right.
Every time you turn around, she was knocked out. And when she died at the end, by the way, spoiler, I just did it. You're welcome. When she died at the end, I really thought she was going to come back.
By the way, spoiler, I just did it. You're welcome. That is the weirdest spoiler warning I've ever heard. She had cool lips. I'll give her some credit for her lips.
She had the original duck lips.
Yeah, those were all right. I don't think she had... well, you know what? I'll bring it up later. There's something she was missing, and I'll tell you later what I think it is. I got to save it for the checklist.
Something that she was missing. Now I can't stop thinking about it.
I know. It's going to bug you. When I say it, you'll go, oh, yeah. You'll get it. You're going to have to wait, though.
Hey, did you guys... I kept getting an audio memory that I kept going, what is that? I recognize that sound. And it was the... At first, I thought it was a TriStar intro. Whenever you see a movie come on, they show the TriStar. But it was New Line Cinema. And I put in the Skype window a link to the New Line Cinema. And they used that violin Casio sound.
Here,
they used it in this movie so much.
Let's see what this is. YouTube? Okay.
Yeah, YouTube.
I'm muted. Hold on. Let me get unmuted. All right, here we go. It's coming.
That note right there.
Yeah.
Right before it goes in.
Okay, so before all that right here. Yeah, there was a bit of that. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that was kind of in that soundtrack.
That's just pressing the high key on the Casio keyboard for that.
Yeah. Ooh, I have a lot of... Hold on, I want to enjoy this. Hold on. Oh, yeah.
That is a...
It's one of the best, isn't it?
That is a good feeling.
It really is.
It makes you so excited.
Usually
you
knew something good was coming when you heard that.
Yeah, well, sometimes, though, it was like Freddy in space or some shitty thing. But right. But usually, yeah. Like, isn't that funny how... Like, here's another one. How we remember these things. Guess this one. Who's this? You guys know these are all so quiet. I don't know why they're so quiet.
Right.
No, they're not. Trust me.
This is a great trivia. This is a great trivia.
Anyone know? Let's do it. Anyone know?
Do it again.
More time. All right, hold on. Oh, dude. TriStar?
Close. No, actually not close. I just said close.
Yeah, no, TriStar, a different one.
I'll give you a hint. Matrix.
Oh, is it
Warner Brothers?
Warner Brothers is correct.
Warner Brothers.
All right,
we're so used to the as time goes by that Warner Brothers is using now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Try this one on for size. There you go. One more. Oh, my gosh. Somebody had to put their titles in first. Hold on. No, that doesn't count.
MGM,
well,
MGM.
MGM.
Bruckenheimer, yep, Bruckenheimer.
Got it. Okay, next one. Okay, they're all together, so that's why they keep playing.
Wacky.
Okay, here you go. Randy, I'm looking at you, buddy.
Oh. That's TriStar.
Yeah.
Nope.
Oh, Columbia.
Nope. Oh. Castle Rock Entertainment.
Oh, okay.
That was a fun little interlude, wasn't it?
Battle of Frog Pants All Stars.
You know what's that's a great idea. Let me tell you something though. That's actually a really good idea, Brian, to do those. That's a great idea. Anyway, one of my things I'm most proud of in my entire podcasting time on Earth, in the 10 years it's been known as podcasting and before, my favorite thing I've ever made. That I combined things together and made is the intro to the show.
Yeah.
Like this whole thing with like the various intros and stuff, there's like four or five. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done. And that will probably, of all the show themes or whatever we do for all these different shows, it's probably the only one I will never change except for the little Fletcher bits in the middle. So there you go. A little fun for you there, everyone at home. All right, let's continue on. Where the heck were we? Oh, do you guys want to do clips? Let's do clips.
Let's do clips.
Okay, clips it is. Clips begin with this clip. This is a clip, and it's Scott Fletcher goofing up.
You know
how many times he's had to do that for us? You think we just have that like on a hotkey or something? Just record it one time.
I think he does it all the time, and he doesn't always send it to us, which is unfortunate, but he did this time, which is fantastic. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. Here's the next one. This is working on a cure.
Who are you? Why did you help me?
I thought it was somebody else.
I can trust you.
For what?
To get me back to Atlanta. There's a group of doctors there, the last ones. They've been working on a cure for the plague.
You know, Atlanta.
You could totally hear that New Line Cinema violin thing, too, yeah, in that clip.
Yep. It was in there, whether you like it or not. That was pretty bad. She scanned him, but how does she know she could trust him? I didn't understand that at all. She just looked at him.
She was the weirdest. I think they damaged her brain when they were turned into a cyborg. That's what I think.
You think that was it?
By the way, you got to love the little letters, the LED letters and numbers and code you see on her eyeball that are the right way around to us. So to her, they're in reverse.
Right.
But
right.
Remember, what goes on back at the optic nerve is things get reversed for your brain.
Back there. They're brilliant. Chalmers is a genius.
You know, they use that same mechanism in the part two. I like watch the first 30 minutes of that one as well. I've been doing Netflix 30 minutes, first 30.
Mm. Hey, Kitty Chalmers, there'll be a little something extra in your, what's the feast, vittles?
Fancy feast.
We did that one. Glasses Man. Here's Glasses Man.
That slinger can't help you now. I'll take you to Atlanta, and you'll give me the cure. And if you don't, I'll give you the horror show.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but I want a shirt.
I'll give you the horror show.
It was like a horrible reworking of Mess with the Bull, You Get the Horns.
Yep. Right. Yep. You get the horror show. I think we already got the horror show.
Oh,
it's
horror.
Not the horse. Horse show?
Not horse show. It's horror show.
Horror show.
Are you serious?
Serious. Brian knows what a horror show is. He knows.
Been to Tijuana.
Yeah, he's been there. He knows.
Yeah.
All right. Here's. Someone tell me why he feels this way about water.
Asshole! I hate the water.
Why does he hate the water?
Because he can't swim in all that chainmail. Sink right to the bottom.
Is that why
he's already been? See, Normie, he's already been to hell.
He clean his glasses.
All right.
What's up with his chainmail?
I don't know.
Because cats hate water. That's why.
I'll tell you what's up with his chainmail. When they were passing out these costumes, they said, "Look, all this He-Man wear that we have, you're gonna wear what the other guy wore, and that's because it's the most evil looking thing. That's why I wore it."
Well, I'm asking because you can't explain why, if the chainmail is worth wearing, he's the only one doing it.
Good point.
He's the boss.
He's the man. He calls the shots.
Right. All right.
Cool throwing. Here's a cool throwing sound. I like that sound.
There's a lot of Foley work in this movie.
Yeah.
Yes. And they use that same, like, when Rolf was spinning his daggers around, or not really spinning, just kind of waving his daggers around, not quick enough to create any sort of air displacement and make that noise.
Yeah, just enough to make a whistle.
I want to correct my partner here. There was a lot of reused Foley work in this movie.
Yeah,
one sat and recorded one new sound for this movie.
Right.
They just bought it from
somebody.
What do
we have on this disc that we bought?
Let's see. We got Punch and Meat. Okay, I got that. Punch and Meat. Gonna put that over there. We got
exactly.
All right. Here's some bad dialogue. We haven't had much of that yet. So here you go.
It's what I do. Get people out of the city.
It's what I do.
It's what I do.
Listen how he shortened that sentence.
It's what I do.
It's what I do.
Why do?
It's what I do. It's what I do.
Yeah. I slowed it down. You want to hear it slowed down, though?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, here you go. Hold on.
That's really slow. I can't even hear it. What's the decibel on that?
Can't find it. Gosh dang it. Hold on. You know, it was a great joke when I thought of it. Here it is. No, it's not there. What happened to... What kind of a deal? It's not in here.
That's even better. You just do it. Pretend like it was real thing.
Another clip you're gonna play as part of that. Yeah.
I can't find what kind of a deal. Oh, I'm in the wrong. You know, I know why. Here, hold on. Here you go.
What kind of a deal?
Okay, fine.
That was good.
It's been a long road. Okay.
Thanks for that closure.
All right. I was in the wrong window. All right. What are we doing here? This sound thing screwed me up. My brain is half on now. Okay, here we go. Working on a cure we did. Hates the water. Got it. Nice southern accent. Here you go.
Don't know if I really trust you. Don't know if there's really any difference between slingers and the pirates that killed my Paul.
They killed my Paul.
Where did that come from?
That was my favorite part. She was channeling the character.
Suddenly she's Maddie from that freaking True Grit.
Yeah, or worse, she's somebody from the Ingalls family and from freaking Little House on the Prairie. That was terrible.
Right. Terrible.
The guys who killed my paw. Come on.
Aww.
All right. I'm
gonna go get revenge on them.
Here's something I titled It's What I Do. I don't remember what it is.
It's What I Do.
Oh, it's what he does.
It's the same thing we heard like a
minute ago. Sorry, my bad.
It was worth repeating.
Was that sped up? I couldn't tell.
I'm so worried about the audio over here. I keep looking at the wrong thing. All right, how about this one? Looking for that woman.
Are you looking for that woman?
Okay, she's a real bad actress.
Yeah, she is.
Had no right to be in this.
What was she missing? What was she missing, Scott?
Acting ability. And that other thing I'll tell you about right after clips.
Okay.
Because you got to wait. It's real good. It's just one of my checklists.
Clips. Ooh.
What else? How about this one?
Why are you still alive?
See, I think it's a cyborg. Sounds like a robot.
I don't think they're that smart. They would have put, if that was the case, it would have been a really cool twist, and they would have had a payoff with it.
That's a good point.
Why are you still alive?
The fact that he heals himself after taking the arrows that he was crucified with out of his hands makes him not a cyborg, because a cyborg can't heal himself.
Yeah, he's Wolverine.
He would just keep going. Yeah.
He's not a cyborg. Forget
he's,
it.
He's Logan. He's Wolverine, dude.
Well, cyborg.
I'm not programmed to love.
All right, what is it now? Oh, what kind of jerk are you?
There's a cure for the plague and you don't give a shit? What kind of jerk are you?
Why don't you rescue her?
Ugh, my gosh, this is so bad.
Jerk are you?
Why don't you rescue her?
What kind of jerks do I have to choose from again?
Yeah, what are the choices? There's the jerk that goes too fast on the road right by
you.
So
tropey.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I hate that guy.
Oh, another problem, and we talk about this on the show a lot, but Netflix audio in this thing or whatever, I don't think it's Netflix's fault, but the movie, the action, super loud dialogue, like mice talking, just so quiet. I had to amp that stuff way up.
At least they got this from a DVD copy instead of that VHS stuff we watched, was it last week?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So, wait, what did we do last? Last week was our X-Files thing, the one before
that. Yeah, week before that.
Surf Nazis Must Die.
Yep. straight from VHS.
Here's her again.
You're pretty good.
That's all. I just had that for her. This guy's super serious. I guess he's a cyborg, though, for sure, this guy.
However, I think it's important that you understand the ramifications of the decision you're making.
He was the flashback
cyborg.
Okay,
wait a minute. Now, I just want anybody who's not watched the movie to hear that clip and imagine that it's Tyrion Lannister.
Ooh, let's do it again.
However, I think it's important that you understand the ramifications of the decision you're making.
Dude, that's weird. It's like
a little dinklage.
Little dinklage. Little dinklage.
Well, I'm saying he's got a little dinklage to his sound.
Brian,
making any sort of judgment.
All of us have a little dinklage in each of us. It's fine. what the yell is this? So here, I guess it's a yell. All right, it's one of the yells.
Was that the bridge fight? I think that was the bridge fight.
I think that was coming up out of the sewer. By the way, and I know we talked a lot about the fight coordination, but coming out of the sewer, wouldn't that just be the best place to hang out with your knife? Because they're all going to come out one at a time.
Oh, right.
Totally.
It's like the perfect choke point. You couldn't ask for a better choke point.
Yeah.
Except for the first lady who came up to the sewer when she jumped in. She threw her staff away because she couldn't figure out how to get it down through the circular thing. I'm like, just turn it, moron.
Yeah, that was dumb.
Like a dog with a giant bone trying to come in through a narrow doorway.
That's not going to work.
That was pretty dumb. All right, well done. Where are we now? Okay, here you go. Here's pirates or something.
I told my sister that slingers kill pirates. I'm going to be a slinger someday.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. Not my paw wouldn't allow it.
No. No child of mine who can't finish her peas at dinner is going to be a slinger.
That's right. Be like your paw and be good. All right, here's a go. I think this is... Oh, he said this a lot.
Go!
He said go a lot.
Go!
Yeah, because they stand around. They're a little bit lazy.
Yeah, you know, you could see how this was maybe a role for a Skeletor henchman at some point.
Right.
And that they turned a corner and made it something else. Here's an even better yell.
Yeah!
All right, that's a good one.
Why?
I don't know. It's just they kept doing it.
How did they get this out of these actors? Like this otherwise awful movie, but at some point somebody stopped and said, no. You got to really give it to me with the yell.
Yeah, sell
Come
it
on,
to
I'm,
me, baby.
I want you to bellow over here.
Yeah, here's another one. Lady, this lady one, though. There's a lady scream.
Oh, yeah, I remember
that. Was
that
the
one.
Bad lady.
Yeah, that, that lady was... fighting the... Yeah, fighting Nady.
Hold on, what was her name? What was her
got
deal?
A nub on.
She was just one of the his henchmen, just a lady version. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
But she got her hands chopped. Yeah, so she stump slapped the lady. It was pretty
stump
good.
Slapped the
stump
lady.
Slap. Yeah.
A lot of odd cutaways. The trivia said that the movie almost got an X rating, or the time would have been X. It didn't have NC-17 then, so it almost got slapped with this X rating for all this violent stuff. But I kept thinking it's not that violent.
No, because
cheesy.
You're seeing the cut version. So right. Like at the very beginning, the guy getting his throat slit, you know, they put the knife up against it and then they cut over to the wedding cake or cut over to the people gasping in horror. Those were the cuts.
Yeah. And the director's edit, Van Damme licked it. He's like,
Can we stop and talk about weapons for a moment?
Yeah, go.
Oh, sure.
So a lot of the guns were just crazy props, right? Just like right. They took a pistol and put a bunch of pipes all over
PVC
the barrel.
Pipe. Yeah.
This kind of thing. Like, so the guns are really actually not very interesting in this movie. But Jean-Claude Van Damme has this beautiful big hunting knife. This big.
I thought you were going with that.
It's just, I don't know. It's a nice knife. And the first time you see it, pretty much every time you see it, he's really got a relationship with the knife. It comes through. And he's got a wedding stone and does not know how to use it. It's the he looks like what he's trying to do is actually turn that sharp knife into a stick. Like he's right. trying to round off the edge.
Right.
Is what it looks like he's doing. And later on in the movie, he puts it in his mouth and you realize, oh, he was actually trying to dull the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't cut it.
Apparently. Well, true story.
His gun was also, it looked like a machine gun and it was like a rail gun. Like it only shoot out single projectiles, but it was a barrel of like four barrels. Like nothing looked right.
Yeah.
And it made electronic sounds sometimes. Sometimes it didn't. Who knows?
Yeah, you never knew. Sometimes I thought that was just part of the crappy soundtrack. This thing was synthy as shit. Holy crap.
Really synthy.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
And they use the same stuff over and over. I mean, in that way, I guess this movie and the surf Nazis are kind of buddies because it was a lot alike that way.
Music buddies.
Here is let's see, we already did that yell. How about that one? We did that one. Okay, how about this one? Some Hollywood punch sounds. These are always fun. That is so Hollywood punch sounds. Isn't that great? That's like that may as well be Michael Knight punching a guy so the kit could come around and pick him up in the car. You know, like that's the same punch.
I was trying to remember how they probably created sound effects back then. I went and watched a video on YouTube from like 1998 to try to get as close as possible to what they might have used.
What do you think they would do? It was like a big side of beef kind of thing, like a pig?
The side of beef was always a really good choice because it had ribs in it. It made a crunching sound, so usually it would punch
a lot of that whip smack sound is actually whipping like a piece of leather and hitting a drum.
Yeah.
Right? Like you don't get that sound from beef. It doesn't resonate like that.
I don't know. I've been punching beef.
You don't get that sound from beef, I tell you. It's a great sound, though.
Randy's got to be from Texas, right?
It's great. Try this one. Don't look down on me.
Don't look down on me.
I don't.
I guess he said. Just
step into a Slim Jim.
Was he the same guy? Hold on.
Don't look down on me.
Is the same guy that. Oh, no, he's the bad guy with the sunglasses. Never mind. I was thinking it was the one. I thought it was a joke because it was like the guy who got killed by Splits Van Damme in the sewer where he did look down on him.
Ground. Yeah. I get it.
No, that was guitar pick McGillicuddy.
Yeah. That guy. He was great. Here's a bad death. Here you go. That's literally how they had him die.
That's him on. Yeah, that was him on the hook, right?
Yeah. How tropey is an 80s hook death? That's pretty freaking tropey.
Oh, yeah.
You know? We're doing it a lot.
Yeah. You don't see it as much now, but back then. Yeah.
Well, because you can't find hooks hanging on walls that much. I mean, you just
don't see a good 80s hook death.
This is true. All right, that's it for clips. Let's now do the checklist. You can finally hear what I was going to say with that lady's missing. Oh, it's the film sack checklist. Starts this way. Van Damme kicks himself in the cross. Check. Kicked himself off the cross. Sorry.
Kicked himself off the cross. Yeah. Horrible, horrible plan. Yeah. Terrible plan.
Didn't go well. Can't tell the difference between long-haired JCVD and future JCVD. Check. Got it. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. And finally, that lady has no nipples. Check. There you go. Are you glad you waited? She had no nipples.
Interesting.
She whipped
they were
out.
Just really light-colored.
They were
lower than one would
they
expect.
They were... Flesh colored, and they were lower than you expect. Where are they? I can't find them. Where are they?
Like,
but I don't see them up here.
Not a lot of support kind of situation.
Now, here's what I want to ask. You guys need to psychoanalyze me. I'm about to admit something that's a little embarrassing, but it's really appropriate here.
All right.
Why is it when I saw her and I see that she has virtually no nipple or that they're so large and misplaced that they're kind of weird? Why is it that I thought of the younger, ugly daughter on Family Ties?
What, like Tina Yothers?
Tina Yothers. Why did I think of Tina Yothers when this lady's boober popped out and there was hardly a nipple there? Why did I think of Tina Yothers?
Wow, I have no idea.
I think you're going to have to get that one analyzed.
I might have to, dude. I admit it's a little bit of a strange thing, but it came to my mind, and
maybe it's because you can't imagine Tina Yothers' nipples. Maybe it's like you get like some kind of mental block. You like
why
oh,
Tina Yothers?
See,
the last time I thought of Tina Yothers was, let me think. Never. I don't think about her ever. I have no reason to think about her. It just immediately came to mind.
I thought it was really actually quite cool that the film went for gratuitous nudity, but it wasn't perfection. It was just a normal looking person.
Yeah, that's like, all right.
$500,000 film, that's what you get.
Yeah, yeah. But like the only way it could have been less gratuitous is if JCVD would have also gotten naked a little bit. Like it was weird to me. Like
I bet you that butt shot is on the cutting floor somewhere in the 2014 director's cut that went straight to Germany.
Maybe.
I can't stop going back to that scene. Like I don't understand why he turns her down. It's just humiliating.
Well, what was the movie he showed his bum in that we all saw?
Oh my God. What movie did he not show his bum in?
He was in the street though, and he was laying there buck naked and somebody came to help him. What was, Time Cop. Was it Time Cop?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think he showed his bum in Time Cop, but I don't think he's shown his bum in anything else. We've seen Splits and other stuff, but I think this is the first naked JCVD we've seen, or that other one rather. I think so. You find the other one. It ain't Street Fighter. It ain't Hard Target. It's not, what else? It's
Van Damme naked butt appearances.
Tell me that had some autocomplete on it in Google. I want to know what it was.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, no. Apparently, I'm the only person who's ever typed it in.
Naked butt.
Let's see.
I'm looking.
There's a note on Cracked.
Oh, my gosh. Do not search for that. If you have Safe Search off, you're in trouble. What just happened? Oh, good Lord.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, that's not just Van Damme is what I'm saying. There's more.
You can see his butt, even though he does have he's got the little spindly thing, I guess you was sumo wrestler kind of. Yeah, there's a lot of bad things, by the way. Don't do the Google image search. I did the web search.
Yeah, if we have any advice today, it's don't Google image that search string that I've already forgotten. Yeah. let's do Star Trek stuff. There is a connection, one only. It's Alex Daniels. He played Marshall Stratt. None of these names. Played the large, hairy, shape-shifting bug creature in Star Trek The Next Generation second season episode, The Dauphin, '89.
So I like how you say that.
Seen Star Trek-wise for Film Sack.
I said Dauphin, didn't I? It's Dauphin? How do you say it?
Dauphin.
Dauphin? Dauphin?
Oh. What Dauphin?
Dauphin. that's the one where Worf fights the shape-shifting old lady, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not the lady, though. And Wesley's in love with the beast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When she's
yeah.
in little teenage girl form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was the exact same year this movie came out that he was also in Star Trek. So there you go. Nice connection, Daryl. Thanks for sending that in. Soundtrack Gator, give it an SP for Synth Poo. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys rounded up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Cyborg, JCVD's 13th best movie, and by my count, his 4th best movie with him depicted as Jesus. If only this one had had a better writer crucifix the script.
I like it.
That was fun.
Well done. Brian Dunaway.
Brian, why not? Cyborg, like joining a gang and being designated the official human knife napkin. My jacket sleeves, they're so bloody.
You keep saying Cyborg, which I know is great. I love that you're doing it. But yesterday, I could only, every time I typed it, I would mistype Cyborg with a B.
Cyborg.
Yeah. I put an E after Borg for some reason every time. So a Cyborg-y or something.
The B is right there, and I just couldn't stop doing it. In fact, making the notes today, I did it again. It's totally stupid. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Cyborg. The original version of this film featured Jean-Claude Van Damme playing with a ball of yarn and then cleaning himself with his tongue for 45 minutes.
Because kitty.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, nicely done.
That's awesome.
I've just been handed, this is shocking. Shocking turn of events. I've been handed alternate titles. Here they are. Here's one choice. What's that you say, boy? A Van Damme fell down the well? Or somebody clean that bad guy's sunglasses already. And let's move on to emails. Here's a couple of them. We got one from Kevin. He wrote in and said, Dear Sackers, holy crap, Ewoks, The Battle of Endor, is available in its entirety on YouTube. This might not last long. Let's not let this opportunity pass us by, says Kevin, who is at KM Lodge, L-O-G-U-E, or Logue, I guess,
Lodge.
On Twitter. That would be a really fun thing to do. In fact, anyway. Yeah, I mean, it's a film sack thing.
I think it'd be fun for about 3 minutes and 20 seconds, which is the one I'm looking at now.
Listen.
Let's see. Right.
And Battle of Endor is not going to be any worse than Cyborg.
No.
It's going to be poopy, but it'd be fun to see for us, I mean. So I'd be willing to do it. But if it's up there illegally and it's going to get pulled anyway, well, we probably won't mess with it. But we typically don't, if we know something's going to go. If YouTube is saying getting teardown notices, then we're not covering that. But if it's up there legally, we're all on it. I don't know who owns that now. Does Disney own Battle for Endor?
I'm seeing a full movie, and it's been on the one I'm looking at. It's been on YouTube since February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2013. So it's been there for a couple of years now. It's not going anywhere, I don't believe. 1,600,000 views.
You think George Lucas said, I'll sell you the whole shebang for $4 billion, but I get to keep Battle for Endor, and that'll be mine. Think he did that?
Yeah, you wonder how much of the... I mean, they've said, that none of the books are canon, but what about the video stuff?
Yeah,
like, is the Christmas special not canon anymore? Is there not a life day for Wookiees?
Anymore.
Is B. Arthur not really in the Star Trek universe all of a sudden?
Oh, holy shit. I forgot that whole thing was like the Love Boat, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was,
where they brought in extra guest stars and stuff. I totally forgot they did that. Yeah, we need to see those. We're ripping people off by not having those on FilmSack at some point. So we'll think about it, Kevin. We got one more, and it's in the form of a phone call. We got a phone call, and it's about Bollywood movies, and it's a recommendation. Here you go.
Hi, this is Rachel from Pittsburgh calling for FilmSack. If you're still looking for a Bollywood movie that you want to sack or anything, I personally recommend Rowdy Rathore. It was released in 2012. If you think catchy music, random singing in places, action, missed identities, and not telling the one person you need to know about the missed switched identities, you've got your movie right there. I personally never saw it with subtitles.
Sold.
I got the description from IMDb, read through Wikipedia, and I still had a really fun time watching it. I think I got most of the plot, but again, Rowdy Rathore if you're still looking for Bollywood. Thanks.
All right, that's Rowdy Rathore, and it's in, I just sent you guys the Wikipedia link. You got to see that poster art. My gosh, that's awesome.
Don't angry me. Awesome.
That's a great title, isn't it?
It really is.
Don't
angry me. You wouldn't like me when you angry me.
It is one of the most highest grossing films of all time in Bollywood. And has been dubbed, not to English, though. I'm looking here. Yeah, no English dub. That would be the kicker for us, is we need an English dub so we can get some sweet dialogue out of there.
Sweet, sweet dialogue.
We don't mind watching, you know.
Or you could just randomly capture some audio and laugh at it.
That wouldn't make much sense, so we're not doing that. Thank you for the call, and you are encouraged to call in, everybody. 801-471-0462. Leave us a message, or you can send us emails at filmsack@gmail.com. Our next film is... Fast. What is our next film?
I wrote down 801. That's as far as I got.
Oh. 801-471-0462. There you go. Did like the FedEx guy in the 80s. What's our next movie? I don't even know. What are we doing? Do you know?
Oh, well,
it's modern, right?
Of course you would ask that question at this time.
I can't find it.
Yeah. Our next movie is right here. Yeah. It's right here. It's
part two.
It's Karate Kid Part Two.
Whoa, yep. Really?
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Oh,
I hate that movie.
And here's the deal, folks. Karate Kid Part 2 has been streaming on Netflix for a few months. It's going to end at the end of March. So you got to watch Karate Kid Part 2 with us as soon as possible.
This week.
We're sacking it next week.
Right. What's the date? So you got it. It's not the one with the bonsai tree on the side of the mountain like I thought it was. It's actually the one where Mr. Miyagi... Yeah, Mr. Miyagi goes back, and it's the drum one. It's the one.
Little hand drums.
Hold on, though. Yep. When's the day? What's the final day? Because it could be bad for me. It depends on when I watch it. So when is it?
Oh, no. We will record this episode before Karate Kid Part 2 ends streaming.
Okay, good.
March 31st, and we'll record this a few days before that.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's not
there's
a problem.
No margin for error.
That's right.
I know. Seen that in the last 10 years, and I can confirm it's terrible, but I still think people should watch it. So let's do that, and let's meet here again next week.
Off the honking scene.
This is not the one with the girl.
This list. Looking ahead at this list, man.
Whew. Yeah, good stuff, right?
Our list is incredible.
Yeah, give us the next few. What do we got?
Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
In.
Oh, I love that movie.
Scorcher.
I'm in.
Starship Troopers 2.
Totally in.
The new RoboCop.
Totally, totally in.
War of the Worlds, Mission Impossible 2, Escape from Alcatraz.
Tom Cruise two times in a row?
No, it's not the Tom Cruise War of the Worlds. It's the 1953 War of the Worlds.
Yeah, and K-Pax needs to come off here. But anyway, we'll talk about that later.
Scott does not want to watch K-Pax.
I love K-Pax. I love K-Pax. I just don't think it's a good film sack movie.
I just watched K-Pax like
since you've seen it.
3 weeks ago.
It's not that old. I mean, Kevin Spacey was...
It is that old. It's like...
How old is K-Pax?
Early 2000s, right?
It's not very old, is it?
Well, it's, 10, 15 years? Yeah, what is
2001,
it?
You're right. All right, fine. I could do Paycax.
Yay. And we're trying really hard, because it is streaming, we're trying really hard to convince Scott Johnson to watch Twilight for film sack.
Oh, gosh, dude, really? Are we really thinking about that?
Yep.
Holy
Who's
shit.
Who's the we in this list?
Yeah.
Randy supported.
Ooh. Yeah, well, there's some talking to be done, but we'll see. I don't know about that one. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here and listening. It's been a wonderful time, despite my weird technical issues that have obsessed me since they started happening. But we seem to have made it through okay. The website is filmsack.com. Voicemails come to us at 801-471-0462. Filmsack@gmail.com for all your emails. @filmsack is our Twitter address. And if you want to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever podcasts are distributed, you're welcome to do that as well. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. Yeah. We'll see you next time.
Get him.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
You always hit that just right.